Penguin Random House Audio presents The Spamalot Diaries by Eric Idle. Read for you by Eric Idle, with a special appearance by Alan Tudyk.
In loving memory of the greatest and the best, Mike Nichols. Introduction. I was friends with Mike Nichols for 15 years before Bill Haber asked me who I wanted to direct Spamalot. Bill had come to tea with Tanya and me at our home in the Hollywood Hills. He'd just bought the play for Broadway in 20 minutes after I gave him a script and played him a couple of the songs. And he was on his way out the front gate when he asked that vital question. Without a second's hesitation, I replied, "Oh, Mike. Mike Nichols? Absolutely. He's a pal of mine. I've known him 15 years. Well, he's a friend of mine too," said Bill, "but he takes ages to respond. So send him the script and the demo of the songs. He really likes our songs," I said. "Well, I will," said Bill, "but don't hold your breath." 3 days later, the phone rang. It was Mike. "Yes, yes, yes," was all he said. In all those 15 years of friendship, in many far-flung places around the world, Mike and I had never argued or disagreed or had any kind of falling out. It was always laughter, theatre, dinner and comedy. Once in St. Paul de Vence, passing an art gallery with me, Mike spotted a skinny sculpture on display behind the glass. He popped his head in and said, "How much is that Dali in the window?" It reduced me to hysterics. Even when we were on vacation with him in Barbados, our holiday snaps were by Avedon. Of course they were. They were the best of pals. Mike was first class all the way. So when we began working on Spamalot, we were the best of chums. But working together is totally different from being on holiday. And as it happened, we disagreed on many things. Of course, disputes over details are an important part of the process. And I have deliberately left these moments in because they show that it is quite possible to disagree with someone and still continue happily working together. During the Monty Python writing sessions, we would argue vociferously about everything, about every tiny detail, about what kind of a chair it should be, about what sort of bird should be dead, and especially about where we should go to film. Disagreement is healthy and normal. It's comedy. It's that serious. I began writing Spamalot at the beginning of 2001. In the mid-90s, I'd been working on a CD-ROM game of Monty Python and the Holy Grail for Seventh Level. Having written and produced a musical for BBC Radio 4 in the 80s, John Dupre and I had been looking for a good subject for a stage musical when I suddenly realised it was right under our feet. Of course, the Holy Grail. I realised that if the Python film could spawn a game, it might also adapt into a musical. It already had three great songs, there are no horses on stage, and the quest for the Holy Grail itself is Wagnerian in scope. Not the ring cycle exactly, more the rinse cycle. John and I had just returned from the Greedy Bastard Tour, a 15,000-mile, three-month comedy tour across North America in a rock and roll bus. I had blogged our progress daily from the road, and so now, leaving home again, I must have continued with my habit of jotting things down, first thing in the morning. I had completely forgotten I'd kept this diary until last year, when we were moving from our old home in the Hollywood Hills to something smaller with no stairs. I call this process Downsize Abbey. And it's amazing the things that turn up. Just how much crap can two people accommodate? I went to boarding school, but it might as well have been hoarding school for the amount of rubbish we'd collected. We had two lockups filled with everything from old Monty Python scripts to hundreds of Beanie Babies that one day, apparently, we were going to sell for a small fortune. Yeah, right. And who needs 27 guitars? Me, apparently. I still only have two hands. Or 4,000 books. I realised I didn't have time to read them again, so off they went to a bookshop in Covina. Let some other buggers read them. Even weirder things turned up as we began to catalogue what was useful and what was just shite. One of the most unexpected was this Spamalot diary. A friend read it and said they enjoyed it. Then my wife read it, and she cried. And then another friend said they'd loved it, and, well, thank you, friends, particularly Shannon. This is all your fault. It tells the story of a most unlikely theatrical hit, from the first read-through in New York to the first previews in Chicago, until finally a Broadway opening. It lays the blame for success squarely on Bill Haber, Mike Nichols, Casey Nicolaw, and, of course, my musical partner, John Dupre. It was a roller coaster of a ride, and I'm grateful to many people, but this book is dedicated to Mike Nichols. It was the best working relationship I've ever experienced as a writer. He was the kindest and the funniest and the most encouraging person I have ever met, and I loved him dearly. And, of course, also to beloved Casey, the quiet genius. It took a long time for all the various parties to agree, and by the time this diary opens in the spring of 2004, Bill Haber has bought the rights, the Pythons have consented to take one-third of the artistic royalties for the underlying rights, a new Broadway record, the norm was 25%, Mike Nichols is on board to direct. He has discovered the uniquely talented Casey Nicolaw for our choreographer. We are 7 drafts and 20 songs in, and I'm flying to New York for the first read of what we hope will be our Broadway cast when we begin schedule rehearsals in the fall. It was the best of times. Part 1, to New York City for the first read. Tuesday, April the 20th, 2004. Okay, now finally it's real. It was rainy and cold when I landed, but soon the sun came out and the blossoms popped. And in the 5 days I've been here, Central Park has turned from brown sticks to pointillist green outside my window at the Essex House Hotel. I remember at the old Navarro Hotel, in the height of summer, watching them spraying the park's grass green. But this time it is purely Mother Nature, although perhaps Motherfucker Nature might be a more appropriate sobriquet for New York. Wednesday, April the 21st, 2004. So, to our first big meeting, when we assemble in Schubert Alley off 44th and Broadway for our initial look at the Schubert Theatre, which will be our home next year. There are about a dozen people waiting outside when I arrive on the dot of 10. Having limped down Broadway. Composer John Dupre is there with Bill Haber, our producer, and Peter Lawrence, our stage manager. Wendy Orshan and Jeff Wilson, our producers from 101 Productions, introduce me to our choreographer, Casey Nicolaw, the set and costume designer, Tim Hatley, and our lighting designer, Hugh Van Stone. Mike Nichols arrives last and is hailed by all, and we squeeze through the stage door and onto the stage. So this finally is it. We all wander around like excited school kids, chattering happily. From the stage, the house seems much smaller than I had imagined. Seating only 1,300, it feels intimate compared to some that John Dupre and I have just played on our tours. 3 slices, but even the high, nosebleed balcony doesn't feel so far away. Nowhere is more than 55 feet from the stage. It also doesn't seem very deep, and we discuss how to get a police car on, which is our current ending. We all look knowledgeably up into the flies, which are, of course, the bits on the front of a pair of trousers. You'll see I'm quickly learning all about the theatre. For instance, I notice immediately that row C, seat 101, is invisible from the balcony, so we will have to alter the song when the knights discover the Holy Grail under a seat in the audience, and drag them up on stage to reward them. We will make it row A, seat 101. After about an hour of this, Mike and I repair to the offices of Mike's production company, Icarus, on the corner of 57th by Carnegie Hall. An interesting choice of name. Mike must feel he's constantly flying too close to the sun, and that disaster will strike any moment. I tell him I've decided to call my company Lazarus. Back from the dead. Casey has the brightest eyes and a great big beaming smile, and he's very cuddly and warm. He reminds me we worked together before. His last performance was as one of the dancing crows in Seussical, a musical I wrote the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?